So our next speaker is David Ryssuk, who's a professor of law and associate dean of the for faculty research and development at Mercer University School of Law. He represents practitioners or others in matters before the USPTO, Office Enrollment and Discipline, and other disciplinary matters, consults with firms about ethical issues, and serves as an expert witness. It's all yours, Dave.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon. I have three confessions to make. One is I got new glasses yesterday, and I need new glasses. The second thing is, if I had known the pain and suffering that I would have caused because of Section 101, I was clerking for Chief Judge Rader when we decided Alice, I would have tried even harder than I did to change that, and I'm sure everybody would have. I worked with Judge O'Malley back then on some cases too, and I obviously can't talk about them much, but the thing that I took away from that experience, apart from the fact that I got to put one footnote in a case that Chief Judge Rader authored, which he never otherwise allowed, was how constrained the judges feel by Supreme Court precedent. I mean, everybody wanted a solution, but you know, y'all have read Fluke and Deere and all those cases, and they're hard to make sense of. But it really impressed me and made an impression on me, I guess is a better way of putting it, to hear people who you think of as being powerful federal judges saying, no, I have no power. I've got to, these are the guardrails, I got to stay within them. That was a very interesting thing. The third confession is, as a lawyer, I hated Rule 36. I had cases of Rule 36 where I was either, you know, heavily involved or somewhat involved in the appeal. As a clerk, I loved them. Chief would come back and what Judge O'Malley and the other judges described is correct. They are briefed. Every case is briefed exactly the same. You know, you meet with the judge, you go over the cases. When the judges come back, they have the arguments, they go back, they discuss them. They come back and you get a sheet and it tells you the result. And if I had a case and it was Rule 36, I was like, that is fantastic because my job is now over. Otherwise, we had to help draft an opinion for the judges and circulate it. So that's my other confession. So let me tell you what I'm going to talk about. And I have a question about whether I'm going to cover one topic or not. And I need your input on that. First of all, what I'm going to do is start off talking about the role of the ethical rules and choice of law fairly briefly. And I'm going to talk the basic principles of current client conflicts of interest and former client conflicts of interest briefly, just to kind of by way of introduction. And here's the feedback I need from y'all. The next topic is how do you figure out who your client is? And I think everybody or almost everybody who's a private practitioner is going to raise their hand yes to this. Do you represent companies? Entities, yes or no? No? Who doesn't represent an entity at all? But let me rephrase that. If you're in private practice, I know a lot of you are PTO folks. Okay. What about startups? How many of you represent startups? Anybody? Okay, that's the part I'll skip that. Perfect. And then what we'll do is I'll talk about adversity, which is really the foundation of a conflict of interest. Talking about going from litigation to opinion practice to prosecution. And there's one fairly recent development in the prosecution area, which I think helps a little bit to understand conflicts of interest. So with that, let me start off, first of all, talking about the ethical rules themselves. We're going to focus in on them, but it's important to realize that sometimes they don't even matter to what we're looking at. It depends upon the context and the jurisdiction. For discipline, they're obviously controlling. If the OED wants to prove something that would result in you being reprimanded or suspended, they have to show a violation of an ethical rule. They control there. In malpractice cases, it depends. There are some states that say if you show a violation of an applicable ethical rule, that establishes a breach of duty. Other states say they're completely irrelevant to that issue, and others say, well, if you show somebody violating an ethical rule, that is some evidence of falling below the standard of care. So it depends. In disqualification motions, and you'll see why I'm talking about these different consequences when we get through some of this, it varies. Some courts say you show a violation of the rule and those lawyers are disqualified. Others say, it depends. This is something to watch out for because it's bit some lawyers, and we'll talk about one of the cases a little bit more.